of his eyeballs, to be honest. The only place he's not growing mutant hairs is his mouth. That's because his mouth is representing spit. Lots of it. Coming out the corners. A ravished mouth on a red-faced troll in a parka. I'd swear this guy is on the run from county, but he's got the Holmes Lake logo on that parka, so he gets to boss us around. Then he sees me, and something changes. Now he looks around the room at the lanterns and the picnic, and he whistles.
Well, well, looks like we got a bit of romance here.
Logan steps in front of him, sheltering, trying to block my view. We'll be out of here now. Don't worry.
Oh, I'm not worried. Not anymore.
Logan's shoulders bristle from behind. I said we're leaving.
Okay. Have at it.
He stands at the door, keeping guard as Logan and I scurry to get the fuck out of this hairy troll's boathouse. You would think we were actual spiders the way we've got all arms reaching and packing and bundling to get out of there before whatever this is in the air, mean and sinister, comes to pass. We duck out the door past Whiskey Breath, and that's all easy peasy, except that Whiskey Breath decides to try out some poetry on me.
That's a sweet little snatch you got there.
He says it, and before it finishes, or before it hits me, or before I can get those words off me, Logan's got a wooden oar to his head. It lands him square in the face, and he hits the dock with a thud. I am running before he can get up, and it's obvious to me that Logan is running right next to me, up the hill and back through the fence, except I hear that oar going, crack, 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 and I look back, and Logan isn't anywhere near me, not even close. No, Logan is back at the dock, right where he was, raising that oar up and down, again with the force of a battle axe. And that guy is representing the color red, all right. But now the color is a deep red, a brick red, that he's representing down his face, down his ears, down his neck, down into the cedar of the docks, down deep into the wooden planks and into the water below. I mean, the guy can barely move. The guy can barely do anything besides lull in pain, swaying back and forth on his knees, making a noise that sounds like begging. And you would think that Logan would be satisfied with a half-dead troll rolling around at his feet like a flailing fish. But he keeps going. He keeps going. Stop it! Stop it! What the fuck? Stop! It's my voice. But the words are just spilling out of me, out of my control. It's my voice, but it might as well be on mute, 'cause Logan doesn't hear me. He doesn't hear me, and he doesn't stop until the man is lying there face down on the dock, a fish gilled. Logan looks at the man, losing steam, and throws the oar in the water. He looks up at me. Jesus. The man is writhing on the dock. Barely a dull moan, but thank God he's alive. Logan starts up the hill toward me, and I don't know what to do. What the fuck am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to run? Am I supposed to fall in his arms, kiss him, and say, my hero? What the fuck am I supposed to do with Whiskey Breath pummeled, and he's pummeled for me? I take off through the trees, trying to make the fence before Logan, trying to see if maybe there's a way home. Maybe it'll be a longer walk, but maybe that's what I deserve or something. I hear Logan behind me, running up the hill now, trying to catch up. Annika! There are about a billion things I could say, but I think the best way to say them is to just get lost, and let that be that. I mean, seriously, what if that guy dies or something? And worse, it didn't even seem to register for Logan what he was doing. How awful it was. Like that quick backhand to the cheek in the basement. Like his dad. I mean, even the ogre, who has decided to make a career out of ignoring me and making me feel like a parasite on the belly of a barnacle, would never, ever do something like that. It wouldn't even occur to him. Maybe more popcorn and more Wheel of Fortune, but never a backhand slap that makes a welt right then and there. And it would never occur to me. But to Logan, it has occurred. It not only has occurred, but it has manifested. It's manifested in an eviscerated whiskey fish lying prone on the dock, moaning. And you gotta wonder, if it manifested in that, what else could it manifest in? What other things does this person who I thought I knew, who I thought was gentle, who I thought was kind and erudite and sophisticated, this Logan who I almost just kissed in that movie moment, and who I thought I was maybe kinda in love with, what else does he have up his sleeve? The fence isn't coming fast enough, and I'm running out of breath. Annika, come on! He's caught up with me now, and I can't even look at him. Annika, stop it, okay? I'm here, it's me, okay? We are both out of breath, and our breath is coming out like smokestacks in the cold. I turn to walk toward the fence. For once in my life, I have no idea what to say or to think or to do. Annika, I'm sorry, I was being protective, okay? That was not protective. That was insane. Come on, you almost killed him. Annika, I didn't mean, look, I know that guy was a creep, and trust me, that was really gross, but what the fuck just happened? Okay, I know, you're right. What can I say? That guy, I mean, if he would have laid a finger on you. But he didn't, okay? He didn't. I know, I told you, I lost it, okay? I fucking lost it, because he said that shit to you. We both just stand there, catching our breath, the stars not noticing us. I want you to take me home now. I just want to go home, okay? Okay. He looks at me with the eyes of a puppy that's just been scolded for chewing the newspaper, and I want to hold him, to tell him that it's okay. But okay is not exactly what it is. We don't say anything the rest of the way through the trees, or through the fence, or through the streets of a place with no people for miles. We don't say anything when I hop off his moped and hand him his helmet and walk up to the tree below my window and don't look back. 34. If you show up at dinner at my house, that's already front page news. That's a headline, and nobody thought there would be headlines tonight. It's just a dumb Thursday with Mexican casserole and some leftovers from earlier in the week. Tomorrow will be fish sticks. Monday night my mom is making steak, she said, which I think is totally disgusting, but the ogre thinks is top shelf. If you live in Nebraska, eating steak is the equivalent of eating oranges in Florida. Steak is everywhere. The whole state is steak. We might as well have a T-bone on our state flag. I know. Everywhere else, it's a delicacy or something. It means big times. Here, it means it's a Monday and nobody cares. But tonight is kind of a low-level night. Nothing doing. And after last night and the great boathouse caper, I'm grateful. Nope, tonight even my sisters are up to nothing. Robbie's at football practice. The Knights play the Spartans this weekend. Big game for high school. Everybody will go to that game, even if they don't watch it. It's just what you do on Friday nights in Lincoln, like birds fly south for the winter. Jenny Schnittgrund will be there, newly tanned. Charlie Russell will be there, with a new rugby shirt. The Pep Squad girls will be there, freezing on the bleachers in their miniskirts, dreaming of their future glory as cheerleaders. Oh, one day to be a real live cheerleader. We all go, in droves, to the Friday night football game and walk around and giggle and freeze our jeans off, and afterward, everybody marches over to Valentino's Pizza Parlor. It's like a religion or something. To stay home? To not go to the game? Whoa, that's like anarchy. If you want to know how authentic the food is at Valentino's, just remember that the waitresses pronounce it Italian. But tonight at Chez, my house, everyone is just clinking and clattering their silverware and shoveling Mexican casserole into their mouths. And then it happens. Ding dong. We look up. Ding dong. Ding dong ding. We freeze. It's like we're guilty or something. Maybe we are busted for being too boring. My mom goes to the door. Hello, may I help you?
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Hi there. Sorry to bother you. I'm Jared. Jared Klein. Nice to meet you.
The table might as well be an ice sculpture now. We are frozen. We are terrified. We are waiting. My sisters, who both went to school with Jared and who both worship the ground Jared walks on, like every other girl in the city, look at each other. Me? Is he here for me? I mean, it might as well be Ed McMahon out there with balloons and a Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes check for $1 zillion. Hello, Jared. Nice to meet you, too. As you can see, we're in the middle of dinner, so what can I do for you?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry, ma'am. I was just wondering if I could take your daughter out on a date, Saturday night, if I could have your permission.
Lizzie and Nina are basically both having a heart attack at this point. I can see them planning their outfits, wondering which one he's going to ask. They will slit each other's throats to go on this date. Henry looks up, pondering. This is a social science experiment he finds intriguing. My daughter?
Yes, ma'am. Your daughter.
If the whole house could lean in so as to get a closer listen, it would. What was that, Sonny?
Your daughter, Annika.
Oh, my God. You should see Lizzie's face. She is about to rush me with the butter knife. Henry tilts his head to the side. This is a new development. An interesting one. The ogre pretends not to listen. Just leave him the rest of the Mexican casserole, and he'll be fine. Annika, you would like to take Annika on a date?
Yes, ma'am. With your permission.
My mom looks back at me. A question mark. This is the part where I am supposed to blurt out, no, no, I love Logan. I belong to Logan McDonough, and he is mine and we'll be together forevermore. Except I don't do that. In fact, I do the opposite of that. I nod. My head nodded. I didn't nod, but my head nodded. My head has obviously been taken over by witches. And where do you propose to go on this date?
Well, ma'am, there's a Halloween festival thing downtown, like with scary rides and a haunted house and stuff.
Huh. Is there a hayride by any chance?
No, ma'am. No hayride.
Because I'm not letting my daughter go on any hayrides with strange boys.
No, ma'am. I would never. I just thought the haunted house might be fun, and the scary rides. But if it's not, we could do something else, go see a movie or...
Close that goddamn door.
Thanks, ogre. You really have a way with words. Jared peeks in and sees the ogre. He catches my eye and keeps it. He gives me a wink. My sisters fantasize about cutting me up and adding me to the Mexican casserole. No one knows what's in there anyway. Well, Jared, looks like you have yourself a date. Good night. And with that, my mom shuts the door on Jared Klein. She comes back to the table, puts her napkin on her lap. Somehow this whole event has made her smile like the cat that ate the canary. Who knows why? Moms. Sometimes they seem so silly and worrying and hilarious, but sometimes you get the feeling they know everything. Who was that, dear? Do you at least know that boy?
Yeah.
Tch. My sisters scoff. They're pissed. They want me dead. I make a personal note to duck out after dinner and lock my door before they catch up with me, pin me down, and spit in my mouth. That's Lizzie's favorite. She's demonic. And worse, now she's pissed. So you do know him?
Yeah. Know him?
Now Henry chimes in, having observed the social experiment.
Mother, he's essentially the most popular guy in Lincoln, and possibly Omaha. It would be equivalent to Bruce Willis showing up to ask you out.
At this, the ogre grunts. Out of jealousy? Is he actually jealous of the hypothetical situation my brother has posed? Well, if Bruce Willis came round and asked me out, I'd tell him I'm married. Thank you very much.
Oh, Mom, what a crock.
We all chime in. My sisters throw their napkins at her, and we all start giggling.
I would, I tell you.
Yeah, Mom, and I would turn into a pumpkin if Matt Dillon asked me out.
Yeah, Mom, If Madonna asked me out, I'd tell her to fuck off.
At this, we all burst out laughing, except the ogre. He's super pissed Henry used the F-word, but that's just making everything even more hilarious, and none of us can stop laughing now, and making each other laugh at our laughs, and even my mom is laughing. Really laughing, and that, in itself, makes it worth it. 35. Today is the big day of the super lame, this totally sucks 600-yard dash. Mr. Duchesne, a.k.a. Douche Nozzle, has made it pretty obvious this is do-or-die time for little old me. He's giving some speech about never giving up, and he keeps looking over at me. Either he has tailor-made this speech for yours truly, or he has a crush on me. But I doubt it. He's always drooling over Jenny Schnittgrund. Guess he's a sucker for too much mascara and orange skin. Shelley doesn't give a shit if she gets a B in this class, or a C, or an F for that matter. Her mom doesn't care. Nothing matters because Christ is saving them all anyway, so what's the point? She might as well just sit at home eating bonbons and watching Hogan's Heroes. But not me. No, I have to care. I have to care because if I get a B in this class, either the vampire will come and fetch me out of this school and send me to study under the Catholic Jesuits in a Romanian nunnery, or I will be damned to a life eating Cheetos in a double-wide with a husband named Bubba and 9 kids who look like extras from Mad Max. We'll be poor, but we'll have love and guns. What Mr. Duchesne is not counting on is my thespian abilities. This is my plan. First, start out the race, seeming inspired by his heartwarming speech. Second, near the 400-yard mark, begin to pant, begin to lose faith, begin to doubt the existence of God. Also drool. Drooling is not hard to do. All you have to do is think of a lemon. Try it. I'll wait. See, I told you. Okay, third, the pièce de résistance. While drooling and swaying like a rookie on Mount Everest, running out of oxygen and wobbling around with altitude sickness, I will look up at Mr. Duchesne. I will look up at Mr. Duchesne because I know he will be looking over at me and wondering if his speech mattered or if the world is just a meaningless place consisting of an endless series of gestures signifying nothing. I will hyperventilate. I will practically fall to the ground. I will cry. But then, folks, I will look up at the you-can-do-it eyeballs of Mr. Duchesne, and I will be heartened, nay, inspired. I will suddenly feel a sense of power, hope, and the triumph of the human spirit. Glory will wash over me. No, my legs will not give out. Not here, not now. Not with Mr. Duchesne and his dumb speech. Today is the day that Mr. Duchesne saved me. Today is the day that Mr. Duchesne changed a life. Today is the day that Mr. Duchesne mattered. Except that, by the 500th yard, the one where the triumph of the human spirit has overtaken me, I hit the ground with a thud and black out. 36. Yeah, I probably should have trained. I mean, it's one thing to put on the grand theatrics, but it's another thing entirely to actually do the work, which, apparently, I never thought of. Mr. Duchesne is standing above me, as is Shelley, Jenny Schnittgrund, and Charlie Russell. There is grave concern. Annika, can you hear me?
Annika, don't go into the light.
That's gotta be Shelley. Suddenly, the blurry circles around me turn into heads, and Mr. Duchesne is stooped over me like a terrified turtle.
Annika, are you okay? What day is this?
Oh, this is gonna be fun.
What?
Apple. Mr. Duchesne panics. He turns the kids away. This is too important for Charlie, Shelley, or the Oompa Loompa. He can't have witnesses.
Annika, what month is it? Do you know what month it is?
I wait. I look at him. Taco? Mr. Duchesne is officially losing his shit.
Annika, I want you to think. I want you to really think. Where are we? What state do we live in? Can you remember what state?
Pause. Cleveland. Now Mr. Duchesne is practically crying. I am not kidding. He is seeing his bank account shrink, his house full of moving boxes, and his wife leaving him for the realtor. Okay, I can't take it. The guy's a dick, but even I am not that diabolical. It's Nebraska. We're in Nebraska.
That's right. We're in Nebraska.
Never has anyone been that excited to say that sentence in American history. And you're Mr. Duchesne. And there's Shelley. And Charlie. And Jenny. I'm just copying the end of The Wizard of Oz here, by the way. Just straight up plagiarizing.
That's right, Annika. We're all here. We're all here for you. Okay?
I can see Shelley over Mr. Duchesne's shoulders, and she knows exactly what I'm up to. She knows me. She knows, and she is doing everything in her power to keep from laughing. Mr. Duchesne, did I finish? Did I finish the 600-yard dash? I might as well be asking if I saved the world, if I thwarted the Nazis, if we won state. Please, Mr. Duchesne, please, tell me the truth.
Annika, I'm afraid you didn't finish. You passed out.
I can do it. Out of my way. And with this, I attempt a measly, totally pathetic attempt to rise to my feet.
No, Annika, no.
Mr. Duchesne thwarts my noble plan and sets me back down gently.
Annika, you don't have to. You've done enough.
And now, it's speech time. Now he's playing to the class.
I think we've all learned something here today.
Oh my God, you should see Shelley's face.
I think Annika has proved to all of us that you never give up, no matter what. No matter what.
The class is looking on, completely apathetic.
And you know what, Annika? I'm gonna remember this. I'm gonna remember that today. Today, you were the teacher.
It's really hard for me to keep a straight face at this particular moment. Mr. Duchesne helps me to my feet and walks me over to the bleachers. I did it. Not exactly the way I had it planned, but I did it. I made him feel important. And walking back to the locker room with Shelley by my side, I can't help but wonder if it's such a big deal for a middle-aged white guy to feel important. What happens when he doesn't? 37. Friday night at the Bunza Hut equals ghost town. I mean, I could turn into a frog in here, and no one would even notice. 6 p.m., and only one customer in 3 hours. And that lady just asked to use the restroom. No one wants to work now because of the big game. Mr. Baum thinks I'm such a hard worker because I always offer to take this shift, but really it's just so I can get out of going to the game without people thinking I'm a communist. I'm boning up on my AP English. We're reading this book now about this boy that gets kicked out of boarding school, and he doesn't really seem to care about anything. I get it. I'm crossing my fingers that nobody comes in now, so I can make it to the end. Only 30 pages left. I've been avoiding Logan since the boathouse incident. I mean, what am I supposed to do? It's not like I don't miss him or anything. I do. Like I miss the way he slumps his shoulders and hides behind trees and stuff. But I'm also freaked the fuck out. I've been checking the papers and nothing about the incident. Thank God. Kind of makes me wonder if the whole thing wasn't some weird dream. Like maybe I just made it up, and I don't have to think about that whiskey breath ever again. On the other hand, I can't help but think of Logan's psycho dad, and that makes me feel two things at once. The first is, I feel for Logan. Think about it. You gotta figure that wasn't the first time the dad slapped him around. And talk about protective. That look he gave his mom. You have to figure Logan's running interference for her and his two kid brothers on a constant basis. Like he's the hero of the house, in a way. But on the other hand, maybe he's also gonna be just as much of a psycho. Like maybe he already is.
It's wrong, and I hate it, and it is not Logan's fault, and it makes me all kinds of angry at the world and the universe, every atom in it. But if I can keep my mind on these pages, I don't have to care. I can make this all just go away. Poof. I can stay in this book, and then this book gets to be real, and everything else gets to be fake, and who cares anyway? But no such luck, because of all the gin joints in all the world, Becky Vilhauer just walked into this one, with Shelley in tow. She is not happy. Shelley stands behind her looking like she wishes she could hide in her elbow. What the fuck? Seriously? Would you like fries with that? Ha ha, very funny. What's this about Logan McDonough? Seriously. What do you mean? Don't play dumb. I know all about it. All about what? How about the moped rides after school? Ring a bell? Becky's leaning in like a vulture. Shelley's getting smaller and smaller with each sentence. The only thing to do is shrug it off. It was cold. Not that cold. Let me spell it out for you. You're a half-breed. Without me, you're nothing. You're no one. You're like a misfit. A leper. I catch Shelley peeking out from behind Becky in pain. Don't look at her. You think she's gonna stand by you? Who do you think told me? Shelley is literally shaking now. A broken animal. I catch her eye and she looks down at the ground. Guilty. Look, Becky, it's really no big... Oh, it is a big deal. It's a huge deal. You're jeopardizing all of us. Do you think I want to get a rep for hanging out with losers? No thanks. He's really not that... Get it straight. Either drop him, or we drop you. And then, I can't be responsible for whatever happens. That's so end of story. And now she turns, Shelley practically attached to her by a leash. Shelley scurries out, ahead of her somehow. Becky turns, a final say. Look, this is up to you, Annika. The choice is yours. And with that, she goes out the glass door, into the freezing air. The skeleton decorations smile up at me, but I can't return the favor. So much for an uneventful evening. 38. I should have known Shelley'd come by at noon. It's Saturday, and Shelley is out on the front porch, her cheeks red in the freezing cold. With those red cheeks and saucer eyes, it's like Frosty the Snowman is waiting out there for me. My mom lets her in, and we go down to the rec room. We've got a pool table down here, a fake bar where the ogre serves root beer, woohoo, and a dartboard I can't hit if my life depended on it. Normally, Shelley and I would go to my room and giggle all over the place, but it feels too close, considering she just betrayed me. She gets the rec room. Are you mad? Shrug. Of course I'm mad. What am I, Jesus? I'm really sorry. I know. She just, like, got it out of me. I mean, she just kept asking questions, and then questions, and questions, and pretty soon it just didn't add up, and she kept on me, and I caved. I just caved. I'm really sorry. I suck. I know. I totally blew it. Silence. The fact is, that's how Becky operates. Yeah, I can see it. You can? Yeah, I mean, I can picture it. It really was like I didn't know what was happening, and then it just, like, came out. I know. Do you forgive me? Well, I'm not gonna lie, I was pretty bummed last night. I mean, when you guys left, I felt like somebody punched me in the gut or something. I know. I'm really sorry. I didn't even know we were going in there till we were there. You know, Becky, it was like a sneak attack. Wait, I know. Shelley is suddenly excited. She has an idea. This is rare. I know how to make it up to you. I'll tell you something I'm not supposed to tell you. No matter what. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so you know that whole Stacey Nolan thing? The pregnancy scare?
Yeah.
That was Becky.
What?
Becky started that. What? No way. Way. But why? For fun. Are you serious? Totally. Stacy did nothing to Becky. Becky was just bored. What a bitch. I know. That's like so mean. I know. Shelley and I look at each other with disbelief in our eyes, and there's something else in there, too. Fear. If Becky could do something like that, on a whim, just think what she could do to us. It's terrifying. Now I know why Shelley caved. She knew, even more than me, the true nature of the beast. I would have caved, too, to be honest. Anyway, do you forgive me? Please, you're like my best friend. Yeah, I do. I mean, I was mad, but I get it. I do. Awkward hug. I've never been very good at hugs. I'd honestly just rather shake hands. The less humanoid contact, the better. But Shelley means it. I can tell. She's never been much of a liar. I make a note to myself. Don't tell Shelley anything. Not because I'm mad, just because she's defenseless against Becky. Becky will get it out of her. No matter what. Shelley is down the steps and putting on her coat. She turns to me. What are you doing tonight? Tonight? Meaning Saturday night. Meaning my date with Jared. Meaning the Oscars and the Super Bowl and the Second Coming all in one. Oh, nothing. Shelley nods, unconvinced. Normally she'd ask me to hang out, but it's kind of premature considering we just made up. Might be awkward. I don't hold it against her, though. Shelley's a good egg. She's just not very strong-willed. Her weird Christian mom snuffed any will out of her. Call me? Yeah, tomorrow. And with that, Shelley is gone, just in time for me to start planning my outfit. I know what you're thinking. What's wrong with me? And I would be thinking the same thing about you if our roles were reversed. I would. But the point is, it's clear that ever since Jared came to my door, I've been possessed by voodoo witch doctors who have obviously cast a spell on me to make me unable to stop myself from going out on this date with Jared. It's not my fault. Their power is too strong. 39. Nobody knows about my date with Jared Klein, except my sisters, who are pissed. My brothers probably forgot by now. Robbie doesn't care because the Knights lost to the Spartans last night, so he's been moping around all day. The thing is, after tonight, everyone will know about my date with Jared Klein, because at least two or three people will be at this Halloween jamboree thingy, and that means by midnight, the whole school will know. And by the whole school, I mean everyone. And by everyone, I mean Logan. Logan will find out by Monday for sure, I think. I don't know how to feel about this other than the way I feel, which is decidedly... Okay, look, I don't know how I feel about it, okay? Jesus. But the thing is, let's say I do go out on the date, and let's say I don't like Jared Klein at all. Then I can just tell Logan... I don't know what I can tell Logan. I'm not sure if I can tell him anything without thinking about him pummeling that guy's brains out by the boathouse. But I'll think of something. I will. Maybe I could just tell him that I wasn't really that romanced by the fact that he almost killed someone in front of me. Or maybe I can tell him I'm in love with him and think he's kind of a hero, and maybe we should run off together and become some sort of Bonnie and Clyde bank robber duo. As you can see, folks, I haven't thought this thing through. And how can I? There's really no playbook for what to do when you're sort of in love with an unstable misfit, and then the biggest heartthrob in history asks you out on a date, an official date, where he asks your parents and everything. I mean, not going on the date? That's like, well, I mean, that's like not going to the moon or something. Like Neil Armstrong just shrugging and saying, "Yeah, I'll pass." And yes, there is the distinct possibility he might just be the world's greatest scam artist. That's true. But how am I going to know if I don't even go on one date? It's just one date. That's it. One date. No big deal.
Also, don't forget the voodoo possession. The tricky thing about getting dressed up and going anywhere in Lincoln, Nebraska, from October to March, is that it's freezing. God damn it. So what are you supposed to wear? It's like a balancing act where you're trying to find the happy medium between Marilyn Monroe and the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. I mean, you need a coat and boots, and you basically have to wear three layers everywhere. So go ahead. You try to make that look sexy. The best I can do is two pairs of tights, boots, a parka, a hat, and a miniskirt. That's the sexy part. Look, I'm doing my best. The fact is, dressing for an indoor-outdoor Halloween jamboree is a fashion dilemma of the order Jean-Paul Gaultier couldn't solve. I get an A for effort. My mom is waiting with me, fixing dinner, while I pretend to not be nervous at the table. She's got the ceramic Halloween salt and pepper shakers on the table. Oh, you didn't know? My mom has ceramic salt and pepper shakers, table decorations, even china for every holiday from here till Christmas. This is a heavy decorating time of the year. She has boxes for Halloween, for Thanksgiving, five for Christmas. We take the holidays seriously here. We're not fooling around. The ceramic Halloween salt and pepper shakers are an undead couple. It's really very appetizing to eat your dinner staring at bleeding, drooling statues of his and hers brain eaters. My mom can tell I'm nervous. It's all right, honey. He's just a boy. Besides, he's the one who asked you out. I know, Mom. And if anything makes you feel uncomfortable, I want you to come straight home. You can call any time. I'll be here by the phone. Thanks, Mom. Or you can even take a cab. I'll give you cab fare, just in case. Okay, Mom. Just be yourself. Mom, I'm nervous. I know, honey, but don't be. Just try to have fun, okay? Try to live in the moment. Mom, are you a hippie? She smiles. No one else in the family jokes around with my mom like this. I don't know why. She always gets the joke. I guess everybody's just too wrapped up in their own drama to notice. But I know it means a lot to her. To know I see her. To know I love her. I swear to God, without her, I'd be one of the first female serial killers in history. Listen, this boy is lucky to be spending time with you. Think of it like that. Yeah, right. He is. Believe you me. The doorbell rings now, and my heart jumps out of my chest onto the table. Jesus, this is terrible. This is going to be the worst night ever. I better not even talk. I'll just smile and nod and laugh. But not too much, and not too loud. Just a nice laugh, supportive. Jesus, what is wrong with me? I'm falling apart. This is going to be a total disaster. My mom opens the door, and there is Jared. He's wearing a navy blue North Face parka, jeans, and hiking boots. Pure Jared. Even though I can't see it, I can tell you right now that underneath that parka somewhere, he's wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt, the one where the angel is falling from the sky. He smiles up at me, and it kinda sorta maybe knocks the wind out of me. Oh my God, this is gonna be excruciating. Maybe I should just say I'm sick and crawl into my bed. I could just pretend I came down with something and run away.
Hello, ma'am. I've come for that aforementioned date with your daughter.
Yes, come on in. There's no reason to stand out in the cold. Jared comes in, and I can see my sisters peeking in from down the hall. I catch Lizzie's eye, and she mouths, "You are so dead." Jared is standing there waiting for me, next to my mom. This is my last chance to bail. I really could just say I'm not feeling well. Honey, are you ready? My mom is trying to make everything normal. Poor mom. She has no idea she's raised a neurotic Muppet who's falling apart.
Annika, you ready?
That's Jared. Gulp. I realize I've never been on an actual date before. This is my first date, I blurt.
Wow, what a nerd. I bet he just walks off now. That's awesome. I must be the luckiest guy in the universe, then.
He smiles. My mom smiles. Everyone's just smiling their faces off. Okay, here goes nothing. I step forward,
and before I know it, Jared and I are out the door. Out, 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 into the brisk night air where you can see your breath and your eyeballs are freezing, and you can get in a dark green Jeep and go to the Halloween Jamboree thingy where everyone in town is going to see you're on a date with the Jared Klein. 40. All the little kids at the Halloween Spook Fest are dressed up like ghouls and goblins, warlocks and witches. It's like a miniature underworld. There are also a lot of mini Luke Skywalkers, Han Solos, and Darth Vaders. Even some mini stormtroopers. And a mini Chewbacca. That's the one everyone's going gaga over. The kid's like 4, and he's got that Wookiee call down cold. There's a haunted house, a pumpkin patch, a fortune teller, and bobbing for apples. So far we've had hot cider and donuts, and Jared has tried, and failed, to win me a black and orange cat doll in the ping pong toss game. He is strolling around the festival like he's the mayor of Halloween. Head held high, it's like he's 9 feet tall or something. Can I ask you a question? I can't help myself. Shoot. Why are you so happy all the time? Why shouldn't I be? It's a beautiful night. The moon is out. That kid's dressed like Chewbacca. And I'm with the most beautiful girl in the world. I think you mean you're with the most beautiful girl in this pumpkin patch. Well, this pumpkin patch is the world right now. Feels like it anyway. I would gag if this were uttered by any other being on the planet. We walk around a group of mini princesses in pink and purple, waving their magic wands. For a scam artist, you're really convincing. I'd say you're excellent. Thank you, but I'm not a scam artist. Annika, seriously, I'm not. People just say that because they're jealous or stupid, or they're just looking for something to talk about. I don't know what to say to that. I think of that Stacey Nolan debacle. That was a complete fantasy, and everyone gobbled it up like candy corn. 2 stands down, Jenny Schnittgrund is sipping an apple cider with Charlie Russell. We walk by, and they both proceed to spill cider all over the place, faces agog, and they're off. Let the rumor mill churn. Now Jared stops abruptly and turns to me. There's just something about you, Annika. You're mysterious or something. Mysterious? Like the part where I blurted out I've never been on a date before? Yeah, that part. He smirks. No, but seriously, I don't know. I just kind of, like, think about you. Like, a lot. Really? Yeah. Why? Man, you really aren't vain, I'll give you that. The pumpkin patch is getting a little crazy with miniature goblins, so we head to the haunted house, presumably so Jared can try to ravish me in the dark. You have to buy the tickets first. So I wait in line while Jared goes to the ticket booth. Mostly, I'm just standing there wondering if this is some joke, like in that movie where the girl gets blood spilled all over her at prom. I mean, Jared Klein. The Jared Klein acting like this. It's like a parallel universe I've stepped into. Right now, there are 2 miniature Ewoks trying to convince the haunted house guy he should let them in. He keeps telling them they're too little, and they keep giving him examples of things they've been able to do, even though they're too little, like see Superman and drive a go-kart. Even the haunted house guy is getting a kick out of it. We smile at each other. Yeah, they're cute. You can't deny it. The Ewoks continue to make their case. At that moment, all of this sweetness and light and goodwill to all mankind is ruined by the scariest creature of all at the Halloween Spookfest, Becky Vilhauer. I should've known. She's standing there like she's been there for hours, and Shelley's behind her, again, looking like a lost kitten. They're dressed up, too, like bitches. I mean, witches. You are so busted. Hi. Thought you could come promenade around with your super nerd, huh? What? I can't believe how stupid you are. Did you really think you could just walk around with that total nerd face and we wouldn't find out? I mean, it's like you're, like, brain dead or something.
Evening, ladies.
Jared is back. He's got the tickets.
If you could peel the expression off someone's face like the label on a jar, I would want these two expressions to go on my wall for the rest of my life.
Becky looks like aliens just landed. Shelley looks like Jesus just levitated. I mean, never in the history of time have two girls been sucker-punched thusly. God, I wish my eye were a camera.
Becky tries to pull it together.
I just... Hey, Jared. Hey, Shelley squeaks. But now Becky won't be satisfied. She must have her day. She must win. What are you doing here with him? I thought you had a boyfriend.
And there it is. My night of 1,000 wonders comes to an end. No more sweet words in the pumpkin patch. He'll probably just leave me here. Becky would just love that. She'll make me beg for a ride home. Seriously. Oh, well. I guess I'll just call my mom.
Except that Jared says this.
She does have a boyfriend.
And then he picks me up like he's carrying me over the threshold or something and looks Becky straight in the eye.
Me.
And with that, he swoops me off into the night of 1,000 goblins and lets the tickets fall to the ground, because who cares about that Halloween house ride when you've got Jared Klein carrying you, and you might as well be on a rocket ship. 41. We're in Jared's Jeep now, speeding home. He turns to me.
Sorry we didn't get to go on that ride or whatever. But I think we both know what was the scariest thing at the Halloween Spookfest.
Hmm?
Becky Villauer. He makes his hands into claws and pretends to claw me.
I really never would have thought Jared Klein would be this witty. I thought he was just, like, maybe of average intelligence. Kind of a burnout at best. I mean, his kid brother, Brad, once raised his hand in biology and asked if trees were alive. That's a true story, by the way. So, what are we doing now?
Well, since I'm such a total scam artist, I'm taking you home now so your mom doesn't freak.
Touché.
Oh, so you speak French?
Je ne parle pas français. That means I don't speak French.
Ooh la la. Who taught you that?
My brother, Henry. Sometimes we nerd out together. He loves everything French.
I see. French toast, French dressing, French fries.
French's mustard, Jared smiles at me, and now we're just total goofballs. But I'm terrified when we get to my house. I'm dying when we get to my house. My heart is leaping out of my sweater when we get to my house. What will he do? Will he kiss me?
Do I want him to kiss me?
Yes, I want him to kiss me. No, I don't want him to kiss me. What if I'm not a very good kisser? Why should I be? The only person I've ever kissed before is my not boyfriend, Logan. We pull up to the driveway, and he turns off the engine. I guess he thinks this is Makeout City.
Here, I'll walk you to your door.
Oh, you don't have to.
Come on, you never know what kind of skeletons might be waiting in the bushes. You saw those kids. They're out for blood.
I hop out of the Jeep and head for the door. Most of the lights are off in the front of the house, so I guess no one can see us.
Maybe.
You never know.
So, Annika, you made my night, kinda.
Really?
Yeah, you did. I like being with you, standing next to you.
Wow. I don't know what to... That thing I said about you being my girlfriend?
Annika, I want you to be...
But this is crazy. You don't even know me. Don't you have, like, a million?
No, I don't. He sighs. Look, I don't know what you've heard about me or where you heard it or whatever, but I'm not bad. I'm just a guy, you know? All that stuff you hear is just noise.
Okay.
So, you're my girlfriend now?
I guess. Every time I talk, It sounds like I'm speaking from under a rock. I just can't believe any of it, and I feel like if I talk too loud, I'll break it. I'll wake up and realize it was all just a dream. I touch the gold necklace hanging from my neck. I'm not gonna kiss you, Annika.
What? Why not?
That sounded bad.
I mean,
because I know there's a part of you that still thinks I'm a scam artist, and I want to prove to you I'm not. I'm just a guy who likes you.
A light goes on in the living room up above us. I guess that's my mom.
Good night, Annika.
He squeezes me on the shoulder, reassuringly. Okay, no one's ever squeezed me on the shoulder reassuringly before. And then he goes, back to his jeep, back into whatever cloud in the sky he came from. He turns before getting in.
Sweet dreams.
And then he's off, and there I am, standing on the front porch, wondering what just happened. And he's right. I will have sweet dreams, because this was all a sweet dream, and I feel like I'm the girl whose sweet dreams never come true, and I wonder how long this sweet dream can possibly last. 42. Pedaling fast, fast, fast. The back wheel, rusty, goes squeak, squeak, squeak. This is the moment. This is the moment, and now the trees and the leaves and the sidewalk give way, and now there's blue and red circles and sirens and red and white trucks, and the trees and the leaves and the sidewalk whisper. They tried to stop me. They tried to stop me. They did. Pedaling fast, fast, fast. Don't see. Don't see it. Try not to see it. Don't see it. But there is no way not to see it. There is no way to go back now. Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is the moment. You thought you could change it. Remember how you thought you could change it? And you want to laugh out loud? You thought that? But there is no laughing. There is no laughing now. 43. I know what to do now about Tiffany. I've been racking my brain since the night she got fired, and now I know the only way to make it better, or even get close to making it better. I have to give her the money. I bet you're wondering how much it is. How much did little Miss Front Clerk and her sidekick Shelley steal from the Bunza Emile in a Bunza? Answer? Drumroll, please. Exactly $1,236.50. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that looks like this. $1,236.50. And Tiffany is gonna get all of it. Don't try to talk me out of it. I've already decided.